Lakutas Sichas Chelik Yudalef, Pasha B'Shalach Sicha Gimel, which is also a Siyam HaMasechta Erevin. It's a summary of the Sicha. In this week's Pasha, B'Shalach is the source of the mitzvah of Tchumin, of Tchum Shabbos, that you have to stay within a certain place on Shabbos. So therefore, the Rebbe now makes a Siyam HaMasechta Erevin, which is the idea of Erev. The end of Masechta Erevin talks about the beginning of the Mishnah. The last Mishnah talks about a sheretz that was found in the Beis HaMikdash, and then goes on, and Rav Shimon gives two rules. He says, where the Chachamim permitted you to do something, they only permitted it because it's yours anyway. And also, he says, they only permitted a shvus. They only permitted the violation of, or the compromise of a, or the compromise of a rabbinic prohibition. That's what he says. The Gemara explains that, what is he saying? These are referring to two different mishnas that are found earlier in the Masechta Erevin. In the fourth chapter, there is a discussion about if somebody ended up outside the city before he could get into the city, and it became Shabbos, and now he can't go in because it's the Tchum, and the sign, the marker that says where the outside parameters of the city are, he's within 15 amos of that sign. So there's a machloikis. The Rabbanan say that you're not allowed to step inside the city, you have to stay outside the city. Rav Shimon says that you're allowed to come into the city up to 15 amos, because when they made those signs, they didn't make it exactly at the 2,000 cubit marker. They did it a little bit in, so that in case somebody wanders out by mistake, they'll be able to come in, and therefore now you're allowed to come in to the city. In other words, that where they permitted you, that's what it refers to. Where they permitted you is because it's your 15 amos anyway. You're not outside the tchum, therefore you're allowed to come into the tchum. The other point that he makes, that it's only mitzad shvus, is going on a mishnah that is earlier in chapter 10, which it says that if the Levim had instruments, which were stringed instruments as well, and if they were playing and a string tore, so the Tanakhama says that you're allowed to tie a knot for the string so that you can continue playing. Rav Shimon says no, you have to tie a bow. You can only do it with a bow. So to this he explains that it's the reason I permit only a bow is because where they permit you, it's only something which is rabbinically a problem. A bow is something which can never lead to issa d'oraisa, because the definition of a knot of tying mid-d'oraisa is only if it's a kesher, only if it's a proper knot. So therefore, he does not permit making a proper knot, he only permits making a bow. And that's what he means, where they permitted only where it touches upon a shvus, a rabbinic prohibition, but not on a Torah violation. So the question is, what's the connection between these two halachas, which are seemingly completely unrelated to each other? Why does Rav Shimon give the rules for them in the same Mishnah? Also, why does he give it to us at the end? Why doesn't he say it where one of those halachas are written? He says it all the way at the end in connection with a Mishnah which talks about a sheretz that was found in the Beis HaMikdash, which we'll explain soon. So therefore, there must be some sort of a connection between these two mitzvahs, between these two rules of Rav Shimon, and therefore he brings them together. So to explain that, there is a rule that when it talks about an Erev Chatzeres, in other words, a place where normally you would be prohibited from carrying Midrabbanan, because even though it's a Rishus HaYochid, but since there are many people that use that space, so therefore it becomes sort of like it sort of seems like a public domain, and therefore you have to make an Erev in order to allow people to be able to carry there. So it says that one should make an Erev, not that you should refrain from making an Erev, but it's better to make an Erev. One of the reasons for this is because we want people a year to be able to enjoy Shabbos, v'karosel Shabbos einig. You should have the opportunity to be able to enjoy Shabbos and not to be restricted and not to be able to bring your food from one place to the other or to go where you need to go, and therefore it's desirable that there should be an Erev. For the same reason, you could apply the same idea for Erev Tchumen, that if a person, a Yid, ends up outside the city limits and is not able to go into the city, he won't be able to enjoy, he won't be able to eat, he won't be able to do what Shabbos is, and therefore there seems to be a positive reason that one should be permitted to be able to go be within the Tchum rather than be left out of the Tchum. In other words, being left out of the Tchum is a contradiction to the spirit of Shabbos, because every moment that you're out of the Tchum, you're not able to keep Shabbos properly, at least in that sense. So based on this, the Rebbe says we can explain that these two ideas that we're talking about now, which is the mitzvah of the Tchum and the mitzvah of the tying of the string for the instrument, could be related in this way. Rav Shimon has a question. If you're confronted with kamus and eichas, which means quantity and quality, which means this, there could be a way that you violate a greater degree of a prohibition, but that will lead to not having to violate constantly even a smaller prohibition. Which one is better? Should you violate one big prohibition so that later you don't have to keep violating a smaller prohibition? Or do we say, no, you shouldn't violate a big prohibition, even if afterwards you will have to continue to violate smaller prohibitions? And Rav Shimon seems to be going with the approach that it's better to do one big violation, which essentially is a greater violation, as long as it will lead to not having to violate again and again. How does it relate to these two mitzvahs? If a Yid gets stuck out of the Tchum, in order to step inside the Tchum, he has to do a proactive violation of going out, violating the laws of Tchum Shabbos. But that will lead to that the whole 24 hours of Shabbos, he will be able to practice Shabbos properly. So the question is, should he step over the line into the Tchum so that now for 24 hours he will not have to keep being uncomfortable and not being able to enjoy Shabbos? Rav Shimon says, we allow you to step into the Tchum Shabbos so that you will not have to keep violating again and again. Of course, that doesn't mean that if he's truly outside the Tchum, it means if he has to step across the marker, which the Chachamim also gave importance to where the marker is, so it's only that violation that is being permitted. Not if you're truly, you know, if you have to walk 5 miles to get into the city, that's not the discussion here. The same question can be presented in regards to the tying of the knot of the instrument. If one makes tying a proper knot is a greater violation because it could lead to an issa d'oraisa, because if you leave it there permanently, then it would be a proper knot and therefore would be considered to be, you could approach violating an issa d'oraisa. If you make a bow, it could never get to an issa d'oraisa, but if you tie a proper knot, you know that it's going to stay, and therefore once it's done, it's done and you won't have to do it again. But if you tie a bow, it's possible that very soon you left it, it'll come apart. That's the whole reason why a bow is permitted, because it doesn't stay permanently. So then you'll have to tie it again and again and again and again. So what's the question is, should you tie the knot well so that you don't have to keep repeating it again, the eichos, violate the eichos so that you don't have to do kamas again and again? Or do we say, no, tie a lesser knot so you don't have to violate a serious prohibition, even if it'll have to come again and again? And therefore, Reb Shimon should be saying, that's what Reb Shimon is saying here, he should be saying that you should tie a proper knot so that you don't have to keep tying it again and again. Yet he says, no, you have to make you shouldn't do that. The question is why? Why does he go in a different direction if the question is kamus, quantity over quality? So then why in this case does he go for quality over quantity? And that's what Reb Shimon says, that when do we allow that? Only by a shvus. In other words, Reb Shimon says, when there is a comparison of two similar violations, either they're both midoraisa or they're both midorabanan. So comparing the quality to the quantity would be comparing apples to apples, so to speak. So then we can ask the question, is quality better or quantity better? And I say quantity is more important. But if the nature of the two types of violations are completely different, one is the iraisa, one is the rabbanon, like in the case of the string, where tying a bow is a drabbanon, whereas tying a knot is going to be the iraisa. So how we, I would never say that you should come close to violating a deiraisa be'echus, so that you can be prevented from having to violate a derabanan again and again. Those two are not the same at all. And we can show that there is a difference between the quality of deiraisa and the quality of the derabanan in the following way. The Alter Rebbe says that if there is a person that is very sick and the doctor says he has to have meat right away, you're allowed to shecht an animal in order to provide him with meat. Even though you might say, why not just buy nevela and let him eat nevela? Because nevela is only a smaller prohibition than comparison to violating Shabbos. So the Alter Rebbe says, one of the reasons is because when you eat nevela, each time you take a bite, each time you eat a gezeis, you're violating again and again. So we see that the even though violating Shabbos one time by shechting is a bigger violation than eating nevela, but the many times of eating nevela takes precedence, is worse than shechting one time. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe says that if the person needs hot wine, heated wine, you should get a goy to cook the wine, even though the goy may end up touching the wine, and therefore when the sick person drinks the wine, he will be drinking stam yeno, which is prohibited to drink, and each time he drinks it, he's violating again and again. So it would seem similar to the nevela. So he says no, because so we see that over there the cooking of the wine is deiraisa, the eating repeatedly wine which is touched by a goy is only midarabanan. So therefore we see that when you're comparing a deiraisa and a rabanan, we wouldn't say that you should violate a deiraisa once so that you can be prevented from repeatedly violating a derabanan. And that's why Reb Shimon says that even though over there by the tchum I say that you're allowed to come in, because over there it's too, there is no deiraisa with a derabanan, but over here by the string, By the instrument, it's a deiraisa and a derabanan, and therefore you can't mix those two, and therefore I prohibit making a knot in that case, even though it'll lead to many repetitions of making a bow. In the same way, we can also explain what the connection between the sheretz in the Beis Hamikdash. What was the story with the sheretz in the Beis Hamikdash? If they found the sheretz, which is a source of tumah in the Beis Hamikdash, there is a machlokes what should be done. One says that the kohen should immediately remove it with his gartel, even though the gartel will become tamei. He doesn't want to touch it directly because then he'll become tamei, but the gartel will become tamei as long as you get the sheretz out of the Beis Hamikdash, so that we don't delay and we don't increase the amount of time that the sheretz is in the Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Yochanan, that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Breka. But the other opinion is that no, you should go find an implement which will not become tamei by touching it. It's called a pshutei kli eitz, a piece of wood that doesn't have any receptacle and therefore doesn't become tamei, and take the sheretz out with that, even though it'll cause the sheretz to be there for a delayed time because you have to go look for such a implement. But you don't want to increase, you don't want to have an eichos, a deeper level of tumah, that now a big de kohuna became tamei. So it increased not the amount of the tumah, but the depth of the tumah that happened. So therefore he says it's better that you should go find the implement so that you don't have to have eichos, more, a greater degree of tumah applied in the Beis Hamikdash. The sheretz lying there doesn't, nothing became tumah yet. If you make the big de kohuna tumah, you've made a more serious violation of tumah, but at least it went out quickly. So the question is the time more important or the amount of tumah that you apply more important? That's why this is in the same question, it touches on the same question of what is quality or is it quantity. To explain this whole thing, or some parts of it, according to the inner dimension of Torah, according to the Pnimi Sa'inyanim, it would seem that Malecha Seitza, which means the Malacha of transporting something from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos, seems to be the central Malacha. That is the root Malacha, and all other Malachas, all the other 38 Malachas, they spring from that one Malacha. Why so? The idea of Shabbos is Shabbos LaHashem. It's a day dedicated to Hashem, which means that when the Hashem created the world, He created it in such a way that it conceals His presence in the world. In other words, that when you look around the world, it might seem that there are two conflicting powers in the world. There is the power of good and the power of evil, and each one has its own domain, and each one has its own territory, and one does not go into the other, or one does not control the other's territory. This, of course, is wrong, completely wrong, because Hashem controls all evil as well. He's the one that created evil, He's the one that gave it the ability to be able to function for the reasons that He has. That is the meaning of taking something from a Reshus HaYachid. Reshus HaYachid means the whole world, everything is the personal place of Hashem. There is no other Reshus. There is no other territory. When somebody does a malacha and he takes it into, he sort of brings it from a Reshus HaYachid to a Reshus HaRabim, that means that he is allowing as if there was another power. There are many powers that could be functioning at the same time. That's a malacha. That's a violation of Shabbos. That's a violation of holiness. In other words, that the malacha of Haitzah, which means bringing something from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, is the root problem of all the malachas. All the other malachas, they come from that same problem. Violating Shabbos is undermining the Rosh Hashanah of Hashem. For this reason, one could say that the beginning of Masechet Shabbos starts with the Malacha of Haitzah, even though the first six chapters of Masechet Shabbos deal with preparation for Shabbos and how to light the candles in chapter 2, how to prepare your oven and the food that's going to be used for Shabbos. All this needs to be done on Friday. And then only in chapter 7 does it begin to, he makes a list of all the 39 malachas and then begins to explain each malacha in its proper place. But Malacha Seitzah is mentioned at the very beginning of the first Mishnah. Why so? Because that is this root malacha. That's where it all begins. That's what Shabbos is all about. Which this explains also a story that the Gemara tells about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was asked by a heretic, why is it that Hashem, if Hashem keeps His own mitzvahs and He respects and honors His own mitzvahs, why is it that He makes it the wind blow on Shabbos and it rains on Shabbos, making the grass grow and so on? How does He do all this if He Himself prohibited that you should not do any of these things on Shabbos? How could He do it? And Rabbi Akiva gave him the explanation that there is a concept of a Rosh HaSayachid, which means you can make an Eruv and that you're allowed to carry within a certain place. There's no question that you're allowed to carry in your own house, in your own Rosh HaSayachid. And since the whole world and the whole universe is Hashem's Rosh HaSayachid, He's the only one that's in control. Therefore, He's allowed to carry in every place. He's allowed to make the wind blow from one place, from one continent to another. But that only answers the Malacha of Eitzah. But what about, how does He make grass grow? How does that answer that question? Now that we understand that Malacha, that the Malacha of Eitzah, which is that Hashem is the statement that Shabbos makes, that Hashem is in control of the whole world, that's what Shabbos is about. Since Hashem, to Him everything is revealed, and there is no issue of a concealment, and therefore there is no issue for Him to transport from one place to another because it's all His Rosh HaSayachid, therefore there is no need for any other malacha either in His world, and therefore He's permitted to do any malacha. Now, we know that everything in creation is divided into three general categories. There is the category of Kedusha, those things which are inherently holy. there is the category of things that are inherently unholy, and therefore we must stay away from them. We have no connection to them at all. And then there is the middle ground, the place where it's a neutral place, klipas noiga, a place that you're allowed to participate, but it's not necessary to participate in everything. But on the other hand, there is also a need to elevate the things in the center, in that center category. The same three categories are true for the areas of Shabbos. There is a Rishus HaYochid, which is similar to the Inyan of Kedusha, where Hashem is recognized as the only power. There is Rishus HaRabim, which is similar to Klipa, where Hashem is not recognized. And then there is an area which is truly a Rishus HaYochid, like a chotzer, like a courtyard that we talked about at the beginning, where you have to make, it's not naturally that you're allowed to carry there, you have to make a neder. There are certain things that you have to do in order to allow you to carry there, because it is a neutral area. It has elements of Rishus HaYochid, but on the other hand, it could also lend itself to a negative thing as well, and therefore you have to make an Erev. So the concept of Erev Tchumin and Erev Chatzeres, which means taking a neutral place, trying to increase the space of holiness, taking areas which are in the neutral area and bringing them into the holiness, that is done through an Erev Tchumin, that there is a certain demarcation which you're not allowed to go past, but if you make an Erev, then you can include a greater area into the holiness of Shabbos. Then there is Erev Chatzeres, which also means the same thing. There are certain areas which are not, by definition, you wouldn't be permitted to carry there, but when you make an Erev Chatzeres, you've included that into the holiness of Shabbos as well. Which brings out a relationship between these two ideas that Reb Shimon talks about. The place where the Chachamim permitted you, which is talking about Eruv Tchumen, and the area that they didn't allow you only where it's a Shvus, which means it's talking about the general concept of Malacha, and therefore that represents, in other words, Eruv Tchumen, the Malacha Evetzo, which is the root of all that. They're both related to each other. But there is a big difference between the two. When we talk about the Isser of Malacha on Shabbos, if somebody were to do Malacha on Shabbos, he would be bringing Klippa into Shabbos. He would be creating a space of unholiness within Shabbos. By Tchumin, it's the opposite. He takes himself, who is a person, a Yid, is connected to Shabbos, and he takes it out of the space which Shabbos is where he's supposed to keep it on Shabbos. He has to remain within a certain tchum, and he now took it outside. So what he did was, he brought the holiness of Shabbos into the area of Klipa, which is not permitted. And this is not the same as when at the beginning of Shabbos and at the end of Shabbos, we are meant to add a little bit of time onto Shabbos by taking in Shabbos early and taking out Shabbos a little later, which what we're doing is bringing in some of the time into Shabbos. There, the Torah says that you should do it, and therefore gives us the power to be able to bring the holiness of Shabbos into the area of Chol, into the weekday, the mundane day as well. But over here, since the Torah doesn't permit it, it doesn't give us the power to be able to bring the holiness of Shabbos out into the place of Klippa. Which gives us a new insight as well. In other words, when somebody were to go out of the Tchum Shabbos and step over the line, rather than what we said before, that all it is a one-time thing that you step over the line and after that you're fine, what you would be doing is that as long as you're out there, what you're doing is constantly, again and again, repetitively, allowing the holiness of Shabbos to be consumed by the area of Klippa. There's a lesson in the to every Yid in their Avodah from this whole subject as well. The Ikir, what is the true status of a Yid, what is the true nature of a Yid, is his godly soul, his Nefesh HaLakis. That is, by definition, higher than the worldly matters. And if a Yid has to lower himself in order to be able to participate in the worldly activity, that is to him a lowering of himself or herself. Because by nature, by definition, we're above that. Just like Hashem, who we represent the Hashem in this world through our Nefesh HaLakis, just like when Hashem has to create the world, it's to him a lowering in order to create the world, so also when a Yid has to participate in the world, it's to him a lowering. Now, even within a Yid's personality, there is the area of life which is called Shabbos, the mind, the central, important, the inner powers that a Yid has, the mind, the heart, and so on. And then there's the outer part, which are more worldly parts, the power of activity, the ability to do things, and so on. What does it mean that a Yid is prohibited from doing malacha on Shabbos? It means that even when you have to get down and do the things of the world, as the Pasuk says, that this, during the 6 days you have to do work. So we have to be involved in worldly matters. But what should be involved? Not the Shabbos. You can't allow the malacha to penetrate the Shabbos of the Jew, which means your mind and your heart. You have to do the things that you have to do, but not involve the mind and the heart. They have to remain dedicated to the Shabbos matters, which means the Torah and mitzvahs and so on. Now, even that someone who is successful not to introduce malacha into his Shabbos, into his mind and his heart, but on the other hand, there's also the Isser, the prohibition to leave the parameters of Shabbos, to go outside the Tchum. What does that mean? That when a Yid is involved in the Shabbos part of his life, which means he's in the middle of davening, he's in the middle of learning, then you're not allowed to even involve the outer parts of your body, like your hands, your feet, and so on, in things outside of Shabbos. You can't be fidgeting with something while you're learning or davening. You have to be completely dedicated to Shabbos and not allow the Shabbos to be brought out into the rest of the world, which is not the rest of your life, which is not part of that Shabbos. Now the third point, which is the Mishnah, which talks about the Sheretz that was found in the Beis HaMikdash. So there could be a Yid that is completely dedicated, is doing everything right, but a Sheretz comes not from within him. A Sheretz is something that comes from the outside and suddenly finds a Sheretz in his world. So what do you do? There are two approaches how a person, there's no question that you're the one that has to get rid of that Sheretz. There are two ways in which you can do it, as the Mishnah seems to point out. One is to involve your own levushim, your own self, which means take your own gartel and pick it up and get rid of it. Or there is another approach that says, no, you're not allowed to allow your own levushim to become tainted by the sheretz. You have to do it in a way that is removed, in a way that it will not affect you at all. So in other words, from a removed state, maybe increase more mitzvahs and Torah and let it disappear on its own and so on. But the question certainly, there's no question that it is our responsibility to get rid of even a sheretz which invades our life. It's still, and it's not really our sheretz, but we have to get rid of it anyway. That's the third element of this subject that we were discussing, because that's what the other halacha in the Mishnah discusses.